Welcome to a special episode of Investigative Poetics. Today, I'm in the studio with producer Michael Lesko, and we'll be doing a question and answer session to give the listener a behind-the-scenes insight into the making of the project.
So it's been a minute.
It's been a little while. How are you, even?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So where have we left off in the story?
Well, it's hard to keep all of these major plot points in focus. But if you'll remember, season one ended with the speaker, that's me, inheriting a black box full of blood money. Mm-hmm. Now, season two opens 3 years later in the summer of 2012. And the narrator, that's me, has just moved to Brooklyn. Basically, in the summer of 2012, I was having a nervous breakdown. I was on the verge of getting my PhD. I had final edits left to do on my dissertation. I'd just been through a really bad breakup. And this box full of money, this secret box full of money, was driving me crazy. But there was like something else going on that I couldn't quite name. So in a moment of desperation, I sought the guidance of a storefront psychic named Cher. So season two tracks this relationship with this spiritual teacher, and all of the events play out in a short span of time, in 3 months.
As opposed to the first season.
Which unfolded over many years. Mm-hmm. So we've got the narrator talking to Cher. Her friend Miriam is staying with her for the summer. And I was going through this really intense process of, I was recovering memories from childhood. It wasn't really like recovering memories. Like they weren't lost entirely. They were just like things I had never voiced aloud. And so I was like making all of these admissions, both to myself and to the people around me for the first time. So there's the psychic, there's the friend who's staying with her. There's a major altercation with the mother, with my mother. Basically, I came to the realization that my father had been very abusive in my childhood in ways that were like literally unspeakable, things that I'd never said out loud. And then I was going through this period where I was bursting open and I was telling these sort of awful truths for the first time. And it was really difficult for people in my life. I had a major blowout with my mother, who just wasn't ready to acknowledge what had happened. And then I went and I took the money and I ran. So at this point in this season, the narrator basically has claimed her dark inheritance. She's like, whatever, I'm gonna deal with this inheritance. I'm gonna deal with this money. And she's doing this in conversation with this psychic named Cher.
I noticed you're referring to yourself as the speaker or narrator. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, that's a distancing mechanism. It is a lot easier to talk about the narrator than it is to talk about myself and my experiences. Of course, the story is narrated from my perspective, but even still, it's hard to claim these experiences and these events as truly my own. And there's a natural desire to distance myself from them because they're so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely one of the reasons why my process has been sort of slow and stymied over the last few months. It's like so challenging. The material is so challenging. It's like this push-pull because it's like I know that the only way out is through. And that the way to get the story out of my body is to tell it and to externalize it and to put it out there. But at the same time, like, I don't wanna. Mm-hmm. But I have to, but I don't want to. Wow. But I do want to. So it's been a real sort of like up against myself challenge these last months.
That sounds really, really intense.
Well, it's not, I mean, it's a lot of snacks.
What kind of snacks?
Well, popcorn. I'm lying. Cheese.
Just
lots
cheese.
Of cheese. And crackers.
Particular kind of cheese?
No, it's really it's a variety of cheeses.
Very nice. Cheese board. So I'm just on the edge of my seat wondering where we're going in the story.
The next episode is called The Moon, and it's the halfway point in the season. And we've got some pretty major revelations coming. We've got one huge sort of biggest revelation yet that's coming a few episodes down the line. And then we have a lot of action. You know, for so much of, this is my story, but much of the story is about my own passivity, sort of witnessing events, being paralyzed by fear, not knowing how to take action and what to do. But this season is really about sort of beginning to come into my own autonomy. It's an ugly process, but coming into autonomy and starting to take action. Now, the action steps are perhaps ill-advised, perhaps foolhardy, but there's power in taking action. Mm-hmm. There's power in movement. And so that's what's coming. The second half of season two is about like one more bombshell revelation and a series of like really big actions.
Is there anything you want to impart on your listeners while we get ready for the moon episode?
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for your patience. And, you know, one thing I really wonder, and maybe you can shed some light on this, is like, you know, I know what my motivations are. There's like a sense of necessity. It's like this story's kind of eating me alive. And so in order to actually live, I have to find a way to put it out there. But I really wonder, like, for listeners, because I do have a pretty devoted following, a small but devoted following. Like, I do wonder, like I hope that there's value in it for the listener. And I hope that there's, like, enjoyment in it and that it's not just sort of, like, a brutal barrage of this and that.
I would definitely say it's enjoyable and it's in your craft of how you tell your story, and also it's, as a listener, I'm inspired by your courage and you're slaying this dragon that is your story while you tell it. In a way,
thank you for saying that. I mean, I hope that the work has that value, and sometimes I really feel that it does. And other times I'm filled with sort of self-doubt. But I do believe that there's like real power and potency in telling the truth. Particularly truths that are hard to say, that are politically inadvisable, that have potentially real consequences. You know, one of the challenges that I've faced is I haven't so much experienced community backlash, but it has been really challenging within the context of my family, which I understand, and I have a lot of compassion and respect for my family. But there are some members of my immediate and extended family who are having a really hard time with the fact that I'm telling the story and putting it out there.
Right.
And that... you know, and it's not my intention to hurt anyone or throw anyone under the bus, but there are consequences.
Yeah.
You know? There have been real consequences because the people who are closest to us have the most at stake. I think it's important to respect where everyone is in their own process and also not to let what other people think and feel dictate how you respond and what your course of action is. I mean, for so many years, I mean, decades, I was really hiding, in large part in order to protect the people that I loved, you know, at my own detriment, and in a way that perhaps didn't really protect them or help them.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the way that you tell the story?
Season two has been a bigger challenge in terms of structure and form than the first season. The first season was written largely in conversation with the public record. So I had the writings of Martha Woodall, who's the journalist who broke the story about my father's crimes. So I had her writings, and essentially most of the episodes were written in conversation with those articles. So it was like, it was a dialogue. It was a back and forth. It was like telling the listener, telling the reader, okay, this is what was reported at the time. Mm-hmm. And then this is what the reporting missed. This is what was going on behind the scenes. This mm-hmm. is what nobody knows. And so there was this great sort of inherent tension and a really sort of journalistic approach. So season two, though, there's nothing more has been written. There's nothing more to respond to. And it is an entirely different arena. It's a more psychological, sort of spiritual arena. So as you may have noticed, each episode relates to a tarot card. These beautiful tarot cards that my friend and collaborator Nicole Franco is making bespoke for each episode. So I'm using the sort of frame as the tarot, as the storytelling element, sort of the structural impetus. So each card has like thematic meanings that I'm exploring, like justice and the high priestess and the three of swords. So it's much more arcane. It's much more esoteric, and it's reliant entirely on my own memory of these events. So I will say that everything is true. In the summer of 2012, I had this little notebook. It was a line a day notebook. It was like a 5-year notebook that I wrote in probably 150 times over 5 years. But most of those entries are from the summer of 2012. And they're like simple sentences, like, today in desperation, I visited a storefront psychic named Cher. Or today, Friday, July 13th, 2012, Cher came to the house to do a house blessing. It's like, so I have like these notes from that summer. It's just like simple sentences, like, I submitted my dissertation. It's mm-hmm. like, so I have this very spare outline of the major events that happened that year. And then I'm telling the story that I never told anyone. Because the interesting thing, I think one of the most interesting things about this process that I went through where I was uncovering these memories. So I'd had this whole secret life. My whole life, I'd had a secret life mm-hmm. that I'd never spoken about. Mm. And then I developed this secret relationship with this fortune teller, and I told her the secrets. So it's like, even as I was coming out of secrecy, it was happening in secrecy. Hmm. Yeah. And so for each sort of memory that arose, Cher would give me an assignment. It was like a ritual where she'd give me a certain crystal and I'd have to perform a certain meditation or do a certain task or get rid of a certain object, or, and it was like a very arcane series of steps that occurred over a few month period. In the act of storytelling, there's always this element of like what you reveal and what you conceal. Mm. Or it's in the poetic act, let's say. Mm. It's this tension between revelation and concealment. And so it's like, it's an interesting, this is also an interesting tension that's going on, because I'm now, many years later, documenting or telling a story, creating a document of an experience, of multiple experiences that basically occurred in like obscurity, like without witness, in secret. when you're putting a story together, it's as much about what you omit as about what remains. But beyond that, I mean, I would be pissed. I would be so angry if, like, someone else were telling this story. Mm. I'd be like, how dare you take these events and make yourself the main character? Mm-hmm. So I get it, where that resistance would come in.
If this were turned into a TV series, maybe then it could open up some vignettes, perhaps, in a way that may, shed light on the different characters in this story.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one thing that I've tried to be mindful of is, like, really keeping the story very close to my perspective.
Right.
And really focusing as much as I can just primarily on my relationship with my father. So that it's not an indictment of anyone else mm-hmm. in my family or in my circle. But I just backing up a little bit, I do... though think or hope that the events themselves are so, I mean, we're talking federal indictments and potential murder and suicide and front page news and storefront psychics. So, I mean, the story has like this like intrinsic drama to it, mm-hmm. this intrinsic, like it could be salacious, but it's not salacious. It's like, it's just like juicy. Mm-hmm. Like it's so like all the elements of story are just like there, like just like ripe for the picking. It's like, so I hope that everyone will forgive me for telling the story because how could I not? How could I not work with this material that I've lived and that I'm given to tell when it's so just
you got a front
delicious.
Row, yeah, you got a front row seat to this and you're a storyteller.
So yeah, it's so...
It's your story.
Yeah, and so I hope that for as dark and difficult as it is, it's also fun. Like, I mean, a box full of money?
You can't make that up.
Well, you could, but I didn't.
Right. I think me and other listeners are interested to know, is season two the end of the project?
Oh, no, Michael. There's more to come.
That's great.
No, there is another educational scandal on the horizon, and there's also an ongoing investigation.
It's an open case.
It's an open case.
Wow.
It's an open case, and there are a lot of suspects.
Wow. So there's definitely a season three.
There is. If I can do it. If I have the fortitude and the strength and the resources to keep it going. It's been a little bit of a challenge. And for anyone who's listening who wants to support the project, Investigative Poetics does have a Patreon up and running, and you can make an investment of as little as $1 a month to support the cost of production and also just the time and energy that goes into making a project like this, which is essentially a book. It's like a book. Oh, this is something I want to talk about. So for years I've been like just sort of like ruminating on the potentiality of like what the book is going to be in this new era that we've entered into, you know, beyond the confines of a physical object, you know, what can a book accomplish in a digital space? And so the way that I see investigative poetics is as sort of a serialized memoir that you can engage with in writing through audio with visual elements that then sort of extends out onto the internet in terms of the way that it links out to articles and resources. So I do think that this project is like, you know, my dream for the project is that, like, I'm really like imagining what the book can do, how the book is evolving. And I do see it on the screen. My father, for all of his flaws, is a very difficult man. And like, really, I mean, cruel, but also charismatic. And he, you know, a lot of the process is like coming to peace with things as they are. Thank you so much, Michael, for taking the time to have this conversation with me today. And for all of your help and support making the podcast happen. There's no way that I could be doing this project without you, both in terms of your technical expertise and your sound production, but also the way that you hold space and listen so deeply to what I'm trying to do. It really means a lot to me.
Well, thank you. Even it's been an honor, and I'm really grateful to continue working on it with you.
Thanks, Michael. Stay tuned. Season 2, Episode 5, The Moon, is coming soon.